Hello there, my friends. It's me, your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you're listening to another episode of The Broadway Cast. Today, I am talking to my people. Today, we are dealing with three ensemble superstars. These are people who have been in countless Broadway shows, national tours, regional productions. These are the people that work all the time. Incredible triple threats. And I think we spend so much time talking to our stars and the creators and the ensemble, quite often and quite frankly, is overlooked in a way that is just not fair. Let's be honest about it. These ensemble members are the backbone of the shows that you get to see. And no one really takes the time to dig in and find out what that's all about. How many times have you in a show, because I know this has happened to me, had somebody come up maybe from your childhood and say, "Oh my gosh, you're in that show? That's so great. What do you play?" And you say, "Well, I'm in the ensemble." And they say, "Oh, well, that's okay too." Note to everyone, never say that to anyone. I'm so in love with the dynamic of the family that comes out of an ensemble in a show. What the audience doesn't see in the wings, the funny backstage choreography, and the bits that happen like clockwork every time are really what make the show alive and keep the people who are putting on these incredible shows 8 times a week, keep them sane to a certain extent. So I'm very excited to have 10-time Broadway veteran Aaron Albano, the incredible Katie Weber, and Clay Rice Thompson here to talk about their journeys as dancers, singers, actors, creators, and ensemble members. It is hard work. It is vital work. And they're my favorite people in the world. So this one is for our ensemble members in every show, everywhere. Before we get into the conversation, I want to remind you to subscribe to the show. Rate us, review us, share us with your friends, and make sure you follow us on social media at The Broadway Cast. Follow me at Ben Does Broadway. And if you want to support us further, you can become part of our Patreon family, and you're going to get exclusive behind-the-scenes content created solely and only for you. Just click the link in the liner notes, and you can support us there. All right, it takes a village, celebrating the ensembles with three of my very good friends. Let's sing about it. Let's go on with the show. Oh, it feels appropriate that we are dancing and bopping to that song. Don't you
love
that
song?
Isn't that song? It's such a bop.
It's so amazing.
Good. Yeah, yeah. And
there's nothing like it.
We need to write. There's nothing like it. There's everything like it. But we need to write lyrics to it. That's going to be our challenge. Somebody out there listening, I want you to write lyrics to our jingle.
Competition.
Yeah. Oh, for the we can have a competition. What's the prize? Lunch with you guys.
Done.
Done and done.
I love lunch.
Everyone
food
loves
is always
lunch.
Great.
Yeah. I feel like life is about getting to lunch.
Just want to be a lady who lunches.
Oh my gosh. See, the theater references are dropping already. That makes me feel good. So we
I didn't even know that was a theater reference.
You did?
Oh, no.
That needs some deep exploring. That's for you and your musical theater therapist, who incidentally is me.
Yeah.
So
perfect.
I'm in the studio with these incredible ensemble superstars. We were just talking a moment ago before air that there's got to be like 45 shows between them. They are so accomplished. They are so talented. It's freaky. It's weird. And they're also very nice, which is also freaky and weird sometimes with the talented people. You never know who you're going to get. But let's say hello to Katie Weber,
Hi.
Who's with us currently in Only Gold.
Yes.
At the MCC Theater, yes. Which I saw. And it's bonkers bananas.
Yep.
I cannot believe the amount of your skill set that they are exploiting in this.
Yeah, they pulled it all out.
It sounds bad, but it's a good thing.
They pulled it all out for this one. It's good. It's good. It's fun to, you know, actually get to like really work hard and showcase, you know, what you devoted your whole life to.
And we're going to talk about that because that's one of the things that people don't, I think, consider all the time when we're talking about strong ensembles is that this is a business that you train your entire life to do for only a portion of your life.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
It's really wild.
Think about that. All right. Clay Rice Thompson is
here.
Currently in Moulin Rouge on Broadway. Yes. You're so good
in
the show.
Thank you.
I've seen you twice.
I think
in the show now. Yeah. And I know you, so I'm going to watch you anyway, but you're just exquisite. The way that you move and your commitment and full-outery.
Is that a word?
It is today.
Is remarkable.
Thank you.
And Aaron Albano.
Hi.
Who's been in every show you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yes.
And is also branching out and doing some incredible things, producing films and documentaries, which we're going to talk about as well. But I'm glad that you're all here. We like to figure out, because we live in a very small business, and we call it the community all the time, mm-hmm. where have your lives intersected in workshops, concerts, shows? I think I'm right in saying that the one thing that all four of us in this room have in common is the Wicked show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, we've all been in Wicked after 19 years. All the best ones have been,
yes.
I guess. But where else do you guys know each other from? Or is this like a first fun playdate meeting?
Well, Clay and I did Newsies together.
Aha.
We did the Newsies.
10 years ago?
10 years ago at this point? Yeah.
10 years ago, yeah. We just did an episode.
You joined in first year, 2012?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it
winter.
10 years.
Yeah.
And I think, Katie, did we do Wicked together?
No. Did we? No.
I don't know if we did it together, but we know each other.
We couldn't possibly know at this stage of the game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think we ever did it together. I don't even remember when we met. It's been a long time, but I don't think we've ever really worked together.
I do remember that I knew you by reputation first. Because I also do think that we are from the same hometown.
What?
Right, we're from the Bay Area.
From San Jose, California.
Yeah, I'm from Santa Cruz, but I went to San Jose State.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And she was American Idol's Katie Webber.
No.
I know her as
San Jose's own
American Idol star. I feel like I can picture the outfit you were wearing in the audition.
Oh my God. Yeah. There was like a tie-dye, ripped, like you could see the titties.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like it was a very like Britney Spears era.
Yes.
Moment.
Yes, it was. You got to get Randy and Simon's attention.
Yeah, I know.
For God's sake. Yeah. What did you sing? I feel like you sang a Whitney Houston song.
Well, I did. They forced me to. I didn't want to, but I sang Orange Colored Sky first.
Okay.
Well, I sang Whitney Houston, then I sang Orange Colored Sky, Natalie Cole song, and then I had to sing Whitney Houston again. I wasn't great.
No, sure you were fantastic.
Great. No, I wasn't great.
You did really well
fantastic.
On the show.
I did. I somehow did well. I was like, my season was like you know, Jennifer Hudson and Fantasia and Diana DeCarmo, and like it was so stacked
and Katie Webber
crazy good, and I was like there being like shoo bop, you know, just I don't know, wasn't my best, but it was okay.
I love that all the people you just named from that season have all gone on to be Broadway performers as well.
True.
Yeah,
nice.
Absolutely. The Color Purple, and Diana did Hairspray, and have you guys seen that clip of Diana DeCarmo singing Someone Like You or A New Life from Jekyll and Hyde?
Oh, I remember
that. I think
that.
She's like on a tour in Korea or something. It's mm-hmm. pretty it's pretty special.
She's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was 16 when we did American Idol.
Work.
It's crazy.
That's
like her mom was there with us. She was so young.
We were all so young.
I know,
at some point.
Yep.
We're still young. What are you talking about?
We're still young. Well, that's what I'm so blown away. I feel like you guys are my people, and yet you're doing things that I just said on a long time ago. I couldn't keep up. You guys are incredible.
No. And Look at you now.
Yeah.
Look at this room.
Yeah.
We're all here because of you. So,
and again,
you are still doing it.
Thanks,
guys.
Footloose
is Ben Cameron.
Footloose is Ben Cameron. That's I'm dating myself. I'm clearly the oldest one in the room. All right. We're going to talk about all of this, but we like to warm up with a game. Warming up is so important.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking about the impact that an ensemble makes. And very often we have to start off a Broadway show strong with a big splashy production number full of ensemble members to set up the where, why, and what's going on in the show. So I am going to list a musical. The first one of you to jump in there as fast as you can and name the big splashy opening production number from that show gets the point. There are bonus points if you sing from that big splashy opening number. And whoever
the opening number, not like the overture.
If you can sing the overture, okay. I'll be really impressed.
I'm gonna guarantee that I'm losing this game.
She didn't know Ladies Who Lunch.
I don't know. I literally don't know anything about musical theater. I don't know how I even got here.
I know, but that's what's amazing, because you have this. It's your life.
I know it is.
It's amazing. All right, ready? I'm going to start off real gentle, real easy.
Hey.
Get in there fast, though, because the people who are listening in their cars are also playing this.
Okay.
And you don't want them to think you're stupid. Yeah. All right, Wicked.
Good news.
Yes. Okay,
that's
so
right.
See, she lowered expectations.
What's it called?
Bum, 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 bum. No One Mourns the Wicked. That's it. That's
oh,
it.
Is it called No One Mourns the Wicked? Yeah. I'm like, it's called Good News.
Good News.
And I'm sorry that I just shouted that into the mic just like that. But,
did everybody feel a pang of like PTSD just real quick on the good news?
Uh-huh.
It's like getting shot out of a cannon. Did you feel
just
it? I did.
Hiding underneath a hat. Like, remember that? Well, did they take that away?
They took it away.
I just did a post on my social media at Ben Does Broadway about the hat because mm-hmm. I was the center of that hat and I was laying on my belly under the shmata and had to like pull up and rest it on my stomach and
now,
swirl around.
Now, were you like in a trap? Or were you like
there was
on
a hole
yeah, there was
right
a hole.
Next to me. So then while it was spinning, I had to like, and there's
feed
fog.
Feed it down in there.
I had to feed it down in there. Yeah. And then
they
got rid of it. And I was like,
well, because first year of Emerald City, we were the first cast that did not have the hat. And we were like, I guess we're just standing over the stovetops. Like,
yeah.
And then they carried that to the rest of the companies.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I've never done that number.
Yeah.
Because I was Chistry.
Oh, right.
And so I did the opening, but then I was changing.
Oh.
Sad.
Wait, are we all pre-books Dancing Through Life people?
Oh, that's good. Yeah, in Dancing Through Life, I'm pre-books.
Well,
they changed the choreography at one point.
They changed it. While I was there, we basically like redid a bunch of numbers. So we like went back into rehearsal and like re-teched and like put in new numbers after the show had been open for like almost 5 years.
So you were there for the installation of the books.
I was there.
Is that
yes.
because they wanted to change the show on the tours, or they had, and then they wanted to, they said, this is a better choice, we want to put it on Broadway? Or do you think it was because
they do a lot of
placing people from different companies in different spaces,
right.
mm-hmm. or Universal Swings, et cetera, that maybe that was an easier right. choice?
Well, original year of Emerald City, we were pre-books. And I remember when I came into the Broadway company, they were like, oh yeah, you know all this, right? And I was like, I don't know Dancing Through Life, because I don't know books. I don't know books at all. And so, God bless, Alicia Albright had to teach me books, and I like 6 years into the run, and I was like,
which has to feel so foreign to be like, this is not how it goes.
But
I actually feel like I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, I completely blacked everything out from Wicked. Like,
I didn't even know there was
a
non-booked version.
Oh,
I only know it with a book.
Books.
Yeah.
I mean, we had books for What Is This Feeling? Loathing that
sure.
we ran around with, but
now like the journals,
totally new. That's wild. That doesn't happen very often that they'll go in and change numbers to that degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably better. Do we think it's a better choice the way it ended up?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter because Wicked will one forever.
Will one forever. Yeah.
All right, onward to the game. Parade.
Yeah. Oh no.
Mm. Farewell, my Lila.
Yeah.
I love you. Old Red has a poem.
Yes, that's right.
What is Parade about?
Oh.
It's I can't believe
literally
it's a musical. It's
name
about
a
Jewish man who may or may not have raped a girl and the people
it's
in
heavy.
Georgia hang him.
Light comedy.
No.
Yeah, it's a lighthearted romp. But
I just saw the Encores production. It's fantastic.
That better transfer to Broadway because
it's
the greatest regret of my life. I didn't get to see it.
It was very
all right,
good.
Cats. That's correct. You're doubling up your points everywhere, compounding points. The Lion King.
Circle of Life.
Clay, you're in there. That was so fast.
That was fast.
Pippin.
Magic to Do.
Katie Webber with Magic to Do.
I have some tea about Pippin.
I would like to hear it, please.
So Pippin, I'm about to spill my tea. I haven't even started drinking it today.
I love it. Yet today.
Pippin, I was cast in the revival at beginning at ART,
uh-huh.
the most like recent one, and I got fired.
Get fired?
I have no idea. No,
you
we
don't know.
I just got let go. It was literally like, hello, you don't need to show up anymore. You've been fired.
Oh my goodness.
I got fired. Yeah.
No one gave you an explanation.
No one gave me an explanation. It wasn't actually that dramatic. It was basically like we'd gone to ART and we had all of our contracts were like for, you know, Broadway and everything. We did like a quick like 3-week workshop before the actual ART production that was then gonna go to Broadway.
And that's
and
when you got let go.
There were 6 of us that got let go between the workshop and the full ART production. And
was it like a giant workshop? Did they just downsize or?
No. Oh, no. They just replaced all of us.
Because it was interesting because half of that cast were theater newbies that were actual circus people too.
Yeah, yes. They didn't get fired. But like the guy, Damon, who played Pippin, he got fired too.
Wow.
This is.
Yeah.
That's the deep tea.
Yeah, I got fired.
Huh.
But I remember that was the opening number.
That's correct. Yeah. Absolutely. Sometimes our greatest traumas can really come through for us when we're playing this game.
Here on the Broadway cast.
Here on the Broadway cast. Chorus line.
Gotta hope I get it.
That's right.
That's the name of the song.
Is it not called the opening number? That's all I know.
I think technically, and listeners, you'll let me know. I think it's opening colon. I hope I get it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is called opening.
Yeah.
Come from away.
Oh, welcome to the rock.
Yes. Well done. Legally Blonde.
Oh my God, you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my gosh, your gay is showing.
I sure am.
Cabaret.
Willkommen.
Well done. Is it called? Funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
Oh, no.
Something peculiar. Something. A comedy tonight.
Damn. Comedy tonight.
Wow,
Aaron, I think you're
impressive.
Winning.
Impressive.
Kiss Thanks. Me, Kate.
No clue.
Oh,
I don't know.
I always confuse this with the opening of Annie Get Your Gun. Kiss Me, Kate is another opening, another show, and Annie Get Your Gun is no business like show business.
Okay.
Oh, another opening, another show is Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah. I hope I said that right. Newsies.
Nope.
Oh, wait. We have a prologue and then we have an opening number. So.
I want the opening number, not the prologue.
Okay. So the Define Life, carrying the banner through.
Carrying the banner, great.
But
and
is that, oh, because
it's
crutchy and, okay,
yeah,
that's
the prologue.
Sure.
No, anything that happens like quietly in a very small spot that leads us into the opening number doesn't count in this game.
Great.
JC Superstar.
No, but
My mind is clearer now.
Yep.
Heaven on the mic.
Well done.
Aaron wins with 900 points.
Wow.
Really? He's got 600 points, and Clay's got 601. That was a nail biter.
Although Heaven on Their Minds is technically like a prologue, where like it's not really a like.
Okay, then what's the?
Like,
buzz?
He's the only one who
is
sings.
The opening.
Yeah,
but there's other people in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Depending on the staging.
I guess you're right.
Yeah. Because what's the buzz is the big like. Like but big ensemble
part
number, yeah.
Huh? Maybe I stand corrected, and then again, maybe not.
I mean,
but that's a good point. That's
points
a
away
good point.
From Aaron.
There you go.
For that one.
So let's break down these resumes, my friends. I'll start with Katie. Tina, the Tina Turner musical, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Rock of Ages, Wicked. Keep going.
Jersey Boys, Catch Me If You Can, Memphis. I think that's all.
Work.
That's outrageous. Go, Aaron.
Oh, gosh.
In order.
Bombay James was my Broadway debut.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was Chorus Line, The Revival, Spelling Bee, Mary Poppins, Wicked, Newsies, King and I, Allegiance, Cats, and now Hamilton.
Work. Round of applause. Yeah.
Results That's... not typical.
No.
No.
Results
no.
not
no.
typical. And Clay?
Newsies, Matilda, King Kong, and now Moulin Rouge.
King Kong of it all.
Yes.
Yes.
I enjoyed the King Kong.
It was fun. It was fun to do.
I actually really liked it.
Puppet the Monkey.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they gave that monkey a Tony Award.
Yes.
They gave it a special Tony Award. I've never seen anything like it. Yeah, it was amazing. You got the final bow.
That cast was stacked.
Oh, yeah.
The best dancers in New York.
Yes. Unbelievable. And I love the choreography in that as well.
Yeah.
I absolutely did. So let's talk about that, dancers. Let's talk about your early lives and training and how you got to where you are with these incredible resumes under your belt. I'm assuming we started in a dance studio for a lot of us.
I didn't.
Let's talk about it.
Well, I was a competitive gymnast when I was little. So
that's
kind of how I like
know.
Knew the awareness of my body.
Okay.
But then I just did community theater shows and sang. But I didn't start dancing until like the end of middle school into high school.
Oh, you're one of those people.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's upsetting because boys can do that.
Yep.
I know.
Yeah, I started dancing at 15.
I started dancing at
15. Wow, really?
Yeah, at 15 years old.
You guys, so rude.
Yeah. So you were doing you were like on the full blown theater track.
Yeah.
When you weren't tumbling and
Correct.
Then found
and
the dance.
Well, I did a tour when I was 11, 12. I did Oliver, and that's kind of what kind of kickstarted me to like really doing theater.
That was my first musical also.
Was also Oliver?
I was 10 years old and I played a hooker, yes.
Yeah.
and it was not a children's show. There were adults in the show.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh. Sorry, just not to
No.
Steamroll, just,
only in
moment.
Show business. 10-year-old hookers.
Yeah.
They won't let you do that anymore.
It's really shaped who I am today.
Look at you now.
How did you get to be that 10-year-old hooker?
Well, I started in the dance studio at 3 years old, you guys.
Wow.
Yeah, and I love dancing. Like, I just loved it from, you know, and I also am just kind of, my nature is like very competitive. So I always just wanted to be the best at anything I was doing ever. And if I wasn't, then I didn't want to do it. And I just kind of happened to be good at it. So I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Did you do dance competitions? Were you in that world?
I did, but not as heavily. Like, I did a couple competitions every year. I wasn't like a super, super, super competition kid. I also kind of came slightly ahead of like the competition culture. Mm-hmm. You know, like there were like a couple really big conventions and competitions that existed. But, you know, that was like fine. But I just loved to dance. And my dance teacher said, if you want to grow up and be a dancer, you have to also be a singer. So I started singing at like 9 years old. And then I liked that, too. And then I saw my trajectory as being a backup dancer for Madonna. Like, that was my dream. Janet Jackson, Madonna, something like that. Which I auditioned for Madonna once. That didn't happen. But
yet.
Yeah, yet. Not yet.
I don't know.
Honey.
I would stay far away from Madonna.
I
right
know.
Now.
It's a lot. I don't think it's a safe space. I'm worried for her. Bless. Yeah. We love Madonna.
I mean, she can do whatever she wants.
Yes, exactly.
But also, I'm just going to stay over here.
There's a lot happening. Yeah. But anyway, I just kind of like, found my cut to. I was like I had graduated college. I got a degree in dance. I was still living at home with my parents, and my mom was like, "You need to get the F out of my house." And she's like, "There's an open call for Wicked in LA, and you're going." And I went. I was like 24.
This is
old.
All post Idol.
Yes, it's post American Idol. Yes, I had done a couple TV shows. I was on Pop Stars.
Yes,
and then I was on American Idol. And then, and then I just was like teaching dance and. I didn't know how to get out of my house. It was like crazy. But yeah, I think I was 23 when I auditioned for Wicked at an open call. I had a few callbacks. This is all in LA. And then like 6 months later, at that time I had turned 24 and I got a call like, they need you to start on Monday. And so it was December and I live in California. So I like went to Macy's and bought a winter coat and packed a bag and came to New York. And then
so
I met you, Bendy.
You flew to New York for the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you flew right into my arms.
Yep. I did.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah.
Was that culture shocky at all?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
This is 2005. Like, I didn't own a computer.
Yeah.
This was like Craigslist time. Like, I'm trying to find an apartment on Craigslist. I had like $20 in my bank account. I didn't know how to ride the subway. I didn't know what anything was. I didn't know how to find an apartment because I didn't have a laptop. So I would like call my mom and she'd be looking on. You know, she'd like use dial up and like, you know, search for an apartment. It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was like crazy times.
All the while being in this massive, gigantic show.
Yeah. And I had never seen it. I had seen like 2 Broadway shows in my life before that, like on a random New York trip for 3 days. I hadn't really been to New York. So.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was, like I said, it was winter. So I was like, where am I? Like, this is crazy. I was afraid to walk more than like a block. So I had dinner at the Olive Garden every single night.
Oh, for delish. Like
weeks. Oh my gosh. Yeah. What's more New York than just hanging out at the Olive Garden in Times Square?
I know. They put me up in the Edison for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
I lived in the Edison for 2 weeks and I went to the Olive Garden every night.
Girl, they wanted you in this play.
Honey, I guess so.
They put you up in the Edison.
It was dire.
Yeah. Aaron, what about you?
So I started at children's theater before I started training anything.
There's that incredible children's theater program in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. Is that the
San Jose Children's Musical Theater? Well, Children's Musical Theater of San Jose now.
Is that the Alex Brightman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the Alex Brightman. It's the Nick Spangler. It's the Chelsea Morgan Stock.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Aaron Albano.
It's the Aaron Albano.
So I started doing shows there at about 11 years old. And I was doing shows there for about 2 years, at which point the director, I think one of my directors, Kevin Haughey, pulled my parents aside and was like, "All right, great. Aaron's good. It's time for him to start learning what he's doing." And so, and my parents, God bless them, they're not of this world. So they were like, "Okay, cool. Where do we send him?" And so we got a recommendation for my first Dolly Dinkle, my Marie Stinnett Dance Studio. Shout out to Marie.
Shout out.
And that's where I started to learn how to kick and turn instead of spin and do my best. Like, it was, so it was great. So, and that was when I was about 13 years old.
And did you have that moment where you said, this is what I'm going to do no matter what? The trajectory of everything I do from here on out is going to be to get to, I'm assuming, the goal was Broadway, maybe?
I want to say the first thing, well, this is so cheesy, but
I like cheesy.
Where I started being like, this is what I want to do was right before all that, when I saw the Newsies movie, mm-hmm. In 1992, when starring Batman. Uh-huh. And so that's sort of
so
where,
hot in that movie. I'm
forget
like,
about
God.
It.
Yeah.
And
before
so
he
my
went
preteen
crazy.
Feelings.
Yeah.
My preteen
oh my God,
heart.
He was hot. Yeah.
That entire cast. Come on now.
Good gravy.
But that's sort of where I like discovered that I like wanted to do this. I don't know if it became like a life goal and a life trajectory until probably like high school, where because at that point it was still like, oh, this is fun. Oh, this is something to do that's not like sports or, but there's no life. Because again, we didn't have internet. We didn't have a way to see outside of
where you were
in San Jose, outside of like the like touring shows that would come in, like touring companies that would come into like the CPA or into San Francisco. But I think around high school, like late high school, is when I discovered that like, oh, you could actually like do this for life. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let me like start dedicating myself. I went to Broadway Theater Project.
Florida.
Shout out to BTP. In Florida at like 16. And that's when I learned about like the different like BFA programs and like different casting and all. That's when I started to really like dive into like the industry as an industry rather than just this hobby that I did when I wasn't in school. So I think it took some steps before it became like the life pursuit that it became.
And like we said, then you train your whole life to do this thing that you can do for God only knows how long. and you guys are really, you've got longevity, you've got legs. talk to me about early inspirations of things that you saw. Aaron, you just touched on that, seeing shows that the Newsies movie.
Yeah.
For example.
The Chorus Line movie.
Chorus Line movie. Chorus Line purists.
I know.
Like,
I'm sorry. I grew up on the movie.
Let me dance for you.
What was her name? BB with the fucking mint green two-piece on and that curly blonde hair, and she's just killing it.
I mean, as much as the purists, like, I mean, I'm a purist as well, but that opening number in the movie
I love
is
the movie.
Because
I didn't know that.
So
I didn't know any difference. So I really thought,
same.
A while, I thought Music in the Mirror was trash. I was like, that's ridiculous. Why would they have that song instead of Let Me Dance for You?
Right.
That's a bop.
I know.
Please forgive me, listeners.
No, this is my musical theater exposure was movies. Like, you know, Chorus Line, Newsies, Funny Girl, Gypsy, you know, all these, you know, I don't know, Showgirls, all these,
Oh my gosh.
I'm actually praying, like, this is my dream, is that they make Showgirls the musical. And at this point, I won't be Nomi Malone. I'll be, you know,
it'll be Gina Gershon.
Gina Gershon. But that's fine. That's fine with me.
Oh,
that's fine.
Let's all manifest this. Yes. I feel like there may have been a Showgirls, like, unauthorized parody moment at some point in somebody's basement in town.
Like the Asylum Theater or something.
It's something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, well, we heard a little bit from Katie. Talk to me about booking your first job outside of our touring when we were 10 years old.
Yeah. About like Broadway debut?
Yeah, I think so. Broadway or a big national tour, when the kind of the moment that you went, oh,
yeah,
I got the big job.
I was in college. I went to Penn State, and I was there for my freshman year for musical theater. And the summer after my freshman year, I came to New York to take class and audition. And I went to the ECC for the West Side Story national tour, and got it. And literally went in the room. Our final callback was on a Friday, and I was supposed to move into my college dorm on Saturday. And I went into the room, terrible. And I was like, so I'm supposed to move into college tomorrow. Like, should I do that? Because there were like four of us at the end of the day, and we knew that they needed like a couple of guys. And Paul Hart was like, wait outside the room, and I'll like chat with the team. And they came out and were like, you got the show.
They told you
and
right there.
Yes.
Oh,
also,
that's so magical.
Yes. Not typical.
No.
That is so magical.
No. Also, don't do that. Don't take my advice.
Actually, you know what?
That.
If you need to know in your life,
I'm actually only going to do that from now on. I'm going to be like, can you tell me right now?
I don't think you should say it and lower
so
your glass and say, and by the way, what did you do after that?
Well, I was like,
did you cry? Did you weep? Did you call mom?
Definitely. All of the above. Yeah. And actually, in that audition is where I met my husband.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, let's do it now. Here we go.
Yeah, it was his first ever audition in New York City, Dick.
But it was also yours.
Yeah, right?
No, because I had like come to New York. I grew up in upstate New York, so I was here pretty often auditioning for like shows as a kid.
Okay, yeah.
And
child star.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. But yeah, so he was reading for Baby John, the youngest Jet. No, that's a lie. He was reading for Tony all day because they were looking for a Tony cover. And I was reading for Baby John because I was 18. And at the end of the day, they had him read for Baby John and me read for A-Rab. And in the room, they were like, great, that's what we want. And we were like, okay. And so that's another reason I was like, what is that? That's what we want. I was like, maybe that means we got it. And then I, yeah. Then we
were
roommates.
When you saw him, like right then, were you like, damn.
Yeah.
So then you were roommates on the tour?
Yeah, because he was straight.
Oh,
so yeah. Many start out that way.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were roommates. Our company manager was like, if you share rooms with people, you can like split the cost of the room and you get more per diem. Correct. Correct. So, yeah.
That's a good company manager.
We got to our second city and we had one king-size bed.
Work.
And we were like, well, like one of us will take the couch and one of us will take the bed. And then,
okay.
And no one's falling for that.
He set up a pillow wall and we slept in that bed for a couple nights. And then.
Not a pillow wall?
Knocked down that pillow wall.
Knocked down the pillow wall.
I don't know. We were sleeping. And we woke up doing
like that story.
Yeah, a lot of my first boyfriends, I was asleep too. Yeah. sure thing. Well, what about you booking your first big gig?
So I was in college at Cincinnati at the time. I was in my junior year, and I think like right before right before my junior year, a friend of mine who was working at Tara Rubin at the time was called me and was like, "Hey, they're auditioning for this new show. They're having calls all around the country, not just in New York. There's a call in Chicago. You should just go." And I was like, okay, cool. Let's just hop, skip, and a jump up. Like, I'll drive up, like, have my first, like, Broadway audition, have a good dance class, and then, like, drive back down, finish my junior
year. Balance mindset.
Yeah. And then, so then I went, and that's when I realized that, like, oh, no one was there. It was, like, three of us. And so then I auditioned, came back to, and started the school year, and then I would start, like, they would then call. I didn't have an agent at the time. I didn't have anything. They would start calling me to come back to New York to have more auditions, to which I was like, okay. The first one, I had to fly myself, so I was like, okay, cool. I guess I have to go. Okay, cool.
You'll do anything.
Yeah.
You'll ride a pack mule across three states.
The second audition, I think it was the final, they flew me in, to which I was like, okay, this is getting a little serious. Okay, I need to, and at the time, I mean, still probably, but like auditioning for things when you were in school was frowned upon. So I was like keeping it. I told my entire class, but didn't tell the school yet. To which then they flew me into New York, did my audition, came back. And I was doing, I think we were doing On the Town at the time at school. And I was in rehearsal. It was a bad day of rehearsal. Like, our director was very upset with everybody. And I was like, I got yelled at a fair amount of times during that rehearsal. But on my Nokia phone, I would have, I got a missed call from a 212 number. And I was like, okay, cool. Broadway's calling, maybe. Mm-hmm. So then on my breaks, I would go and like take my call, like listen to my messages. It was Tara Rubin, and she was, and I think it was Mona from Tara's office at the time. Shout out to Mona.
Word.
And all of my other calls from her were all very like hurried and rushed and be like, hey, call us back when you can. This one was very like, hey, when you have a moment, just give us a call. So of course I had to go back to rehearsal, come back.
You didn't get a call right away?
I couldn't because we were on like a five.
Oh, your heart must have been on fire. Yeah.
So then like an hour and a half later, I then like went out to call. Brian Sears was with me at the time.
Yes.
And so he came, because I was like, something's happening. He came outside with me so I could make the call. I called back. They said that I got the show, Bombay James, and I had to like move to New York in like February. Or rehearsals would start in February, so I'd need to move like in January. I remember I was like, thank you. Hung up the phone. Brian and I like hugged. And then we both went back into rehearsal like nothing happened. Amidst this, like, very...
Did your attitude towards rehearsal change?
100%. Because, like, I was like, you can yell at me all you want now.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter today. And then, like, the next day, I had to figure out all the, like, okay, so I'm leaving school now. I need to actually tell them what's happening.
Yes. All three of you moved to New York to do these big gigs. That's fairly uncommon. You know, we hear so many people come and you pound the pavement for who knows how long. I think I remember saying to myself, I'm going to give this at least 10 years if I to try to book a Broadway show, because that B word I was obsessed with since childhood. Grateful that it happened a little bit sooner than I anticipated, but I would have put the work in on that. So that's very... that's very cool that you guys had that experience.
Thank you.
Now, with these big shows, is there a difference in booking the first show that you go, oh my gosh, I guess this is my life, to booking the second show, the third show? Is there a greater confidence in it? Like, okay, it wasn't just a flash in the pan. How does that vary as you continue to book work and do important and exciting projects?
I really feel right now like every show is my last show. Like, I'm like, I can't possibly book another show ever again. Like, I also, I don't know, this is like a sickness I have, or maybe it's the truth, where I kind of like every show I book, I'm like, oh, they, like, I feel like they felt bad for me, or like, I feel like
you are ridiculous.
No, but, or I feel oh, so and so wasn't available. Like, you know, it just somehow I got lucky, and like there's no possible way this is ever going to continue to happen again. And then I'm kind of like, wow, okay, here we are, you know, I'm 41 years old and still.
And dancing harder than you've ever danced in a show.
Yes, absolutely. Dancing harder than I've ever danced in a show.
That's hilarious that somebody as accomplished as you has that imposter syndrome.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that imposter syndrome like doesn't go away. No. Like, because yes, you're like, you're like
10
after
shows
your first
later. You don't be like, obviously.
I mean, if and were I looking at, like, if I look at Cameron Adams, who's done 13, I'm like, that has to be gone. I don't think it is. And I don't think, because every time it's such a blessing to be here that you're like, you can't. I mean, this has got to be like, this can't be right. Like, it's,
It also feels like there's a window. Like, at first, it's like, oh my God, this can't be real. Like, I booked a Broadway show and then I booked another Broadway show. And that's wild. And then you're like, and then you book a few more and you're like, oh yeah, I just do Broadway. Like, I book Broadway shows. And then it kind of gets to where you're like older than everybody, you know? And then you're like, how am I still booking a Broadway show? Like, this can't, you know what I mean? Because you see, you go to an audition and you're like, everybody's like, oh, my body, I'm so sore, my 26-year-old body. And you're like, shut the fuck up. Like, you know what I mean? And then you're just like, I can't possibly be dancing next to this person. And then somehow you're like, well, okay, here we are. Mm-hmm. So I feel there is kind of a window of time where you're like, oh, it's cute, whatever, cool. Of course, it's always exciting to book a Broadway show.
Absolutely.
But you maybe take it for granted a little bit more. And then, you know, you get back into that, like, no fucking way is this happening.
Yeah. But it's so wonderful that you bring a lot to the table with your experience, and directors and choreographers, casting directors know they can trust you, and that it makes it a little bit easier on them. Did you feel a big difference?
Not really, no. I mean, when I got the call for Moulin Rouge, I think especially after, since it was after the pandemic, I mean, I burst into tears. It's like the same as I did when I booked my first one. It's like, it's so hard to take it for granted because, again, especially after the pandemic, you're like, is this going to happen in the same way that it happened pre-pandemic? Or is it going to happen for me in the same way? Like, I've been sitting on my butt for 2.5 years. So no, I mean, I am still so, so grateful to have done 4 and
you're just
double
getting started,
the number. My goodness.
What has been, we talked to a lot of people who are very used to being in the room by themselves with a creative team or a casting director for an audition. Very different experience when you have to go in and battle it out on the dance floor in an audition room. What have been kind of the most epic or striking or weird audition processes you've been a part of?
I mean, in terms of like that big like chorus line room at the end of the process.
Yeah.
I do feel like I've been fortunate enough to be in a fair amount of those rooms. Like the to go into the original tour of Wicked, that was an epic room. Mm-hmm. Because I think they were replacing some of the first Broadway replacements at the same time. That was a big room. Newsies was a huge room.
That I can't imagine.
That one was an insane room. It was And it was for Paper Mill. It wasn't even for Broadway yet. It was for Paper Mill.
It wasn't we knew it was going to Broadway. was it in that Newsies room particularly, was it a lot of hooping and hollering and cheering each other on, or did it feel tense and competitive?
It didn't feel tense and competitive, but it didn't... Everyone was a little too focused to be hooting and hollering. Like, it wasn't quite like a dance convention as much as we wanted it to be, because everyone was just very, like... At that point, it got very Chorus Line-esque, where people were like, I really want this job.
Yeah.
I really, really want it. And luckily, everyone was still able to be supportive, and, like, no one was, like, throwing marbles or anything. But, like... there we are. But, like, it was...
alone.
Yeah. And we had all had known each other, and so we're all very excited for each other, especially when people do well. But it was definitely more of an air of like, great job, instead of like a work fierce, get it. Yeah. Like, it wasn't that. Cats was another big, giant, intense room. That one was a little more hootie and hollery, I think. Because also it was a lot more specialized, because some people knew the Mistoffelees stuff. Some people knew the Tugger stuff. And so if you didn't know the Mistoffelees stuff, you could just watch the people who did the Mistoffelees stuff and gag over it.
Yeah.
It's always easier when you can like see people that you know. You're like, I know that's not my competition. They're up for something completely different.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, I've been in some rooms that are just the vibes are not immaculate.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I would agree.
Like, I don't know. There have always, of course, been amazing rooms, and there are people that I love in this industry. And, like, you know, everybody that I know in New York is because I met them in this industry. And people, it's like full of magical people, and it's also full of horrible people.
Sure.
And there are some rooms that are just like, auditioning is hard in that way. You walk into a room with people, and one person whose energy is like heavy and draining can walk in, and they all, you know, their behavior at an audition is they can't speak to you. They can't look at you. They're so focused, and they just need to do their ballet bar. And you're like, get over yourself. You know what I mean?
The posturing. Like, I remember the posturing. You walk into people who are in a full tilt extension and
like,
doing a full ballet
bar. Some of those
bar,
rooms can
like,
be very performative.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a sponge for energy like that. It's hard for me to not like take on other people's energy. So I've always had a really hard time like seeing people walk into a room like that and not have it affect me, even though it has nothing to do with me.
Sure.
So that's always hard for me in a big room, you know. But also, I think there have been some, I can't remember like specifics, but there have been rooms that have just been like, actually, oh, this is just feels like I'm dancing with my friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's so much easier. But especially when it's like guys and girls at the same time.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite, because
I
feel like those are full of hooping and hollering, because you're like you said, you're not my competition.
Yes.
I can just only root for you. So I love getting those.
I feel like, and tell me if you guys disagree, because I feel like the posturing and the performativity of those auditions always, maybe this is unique to my experience, but I feel like those are always like the call before the final call. Because that's where all of like that energy almost maybe gets weeded out usually.
I disagree.
You did?
Okay. Yes.
Cool. I mean.
But I also think it's so different with guys and girls.
Fair. Yeah.
Like
absolutely.
There was a time when I could not go to a girl, like a female call for some reason. And I danced with the boys, and I was like, whoa, this is different. Like, this is a different vibe than with all the chickies.
And that's a great moment too, because all eyes are on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, sorry, I can't make it to the girls' call at 4.
Yes.
I have an orthodontist appointment.
Yeah.
Yes, that happened actually I went in for Matilda with, there were like 6 newsies, because I don't know why, but we couldn't go, and it was like the best audition I have ever, I mean, maybe the reason I booked it, because I like was so comfortable, and it was like, oh, literally everyone is here to support, and it was just like the 4 of us that got to like twirl in that like supportive room.
Yeah.
So after you battle it out in these great big rooms, what are your go-to audition songs?
Oh, it's been a minute now, but I feel like for a while it was a Proud of Your Boy.
Oh my gosh, heartbreaking, cuddly.
I think more recently it was a, what's that song, that Robin's Dancing on My Own.
Aww.
Oh,
I think that was
ball.
And then sometimes for like a fun pop, I'll do a Karma Chameleon.
All right. Yes. Wow. Giving away the tricks.
I've sang Black Velvet for every Broadway show I've ever booked.
Work!
Except for Wicked, which I sang Whitney Houston, actually. I sang I Want to Dance with Somebody for my Wicked audition, and because I literally was like, I need sheet music, and I didn't have any. And again, this is like pre-laptop, pre-like...
MusicNotes.com.
MusicNotes.com, yeah. Like printing music. So I like had some sheet music, and I remember I handed it to the pianist, and it was like chord, and I was like... Clock strikes upon the hour as the sun begins to fade. Chord still enough time to figure out how to chase him up. So I basically sang it a cappella. But after that, I have sang Black Velvet for every single thing. I am a huge proponent of don't listen to, if you're being asked to sing from your book, you sing whatever is in your book that you like singing, that you sing best, regardless of genre. I am telling you, 8 Broadway shows later, this has worked for me. You just do whatever song you want to sing that you sing best. If they want to hear something else, then we'll go somewhere else after that. But I always come through with good old faithful Black Velvet.
Nice.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I agree. Yeah, I 100% agree as well.
Because I remember as a young performer, like going, oh my gosh, I need a Berlin tune by tomorrow.
Yes. Right.
And doing it, and then standing there and shaking and not knowing what was going on.
No, they're always like, we need, you know, traditional musical theater. I'm like, great, I'll be singing Black Velvet.
I did the same. Mine was Ordinary People by John Legend for years, and I did it like for West Side Story. And they said the same thing of like, do you have anything a little more classic? And I said, no, but I can do this one a little bit more classic.
What?
And I did. And
that's magical.
Yeah, amazing.
Do you have a ballad? I'm just going to slow it down now.
Yeah.
Can we just do this half tempo? Yeah.
Oh, amazing. That's magical. Let's talk about the dynamics of being on stage in an ensemble. We've been in shows with large ensembles, been in shows with small ensembles. What are some of the noted differences as far as the weight you carry in the storytelling? Is it more fun to be in a large ensemble, less? What are your thoughts on that?
I feel like, if I may challenge the premise of the question.
I wish you would.
Yeah, I feel like there's, because I've had this conversation with a lot of people, I think it's less about like large versus small versus like the function of the ensemble in the show. Mm-hmm. Like take a show like Newsies, where you're like, I'd say more integral, like you have your own characters, like you have a name, you have people, versus shows that are a little more traditional, where you're a little more atmospheric.
Yes.
Where you don't necessarily have an identity, but you're there to create a mood, you're there to create an environment. I think those two versions of ensembles can affect the dynamic of how you approach the work and then also like the morale in the show.
I love that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that before, but absolutely true. And I mean, I'll just go out and say it. That's the big difference between something like a Newsies and a Wicked, where you really are much more atmospheric.
Right, right.
In Wicked. What are your thoughts?
No, I'm obsessed with that. It's the same, like he said about Newsies being felt like more of an individualized show, where like a Moulin Rouge, you're like that atmospheric, you're like at a bar, or a Wicked where you're like at the Ozzfest Ballroom, you're not. I mean, sure, you have your individuality with it, but
you're like an Aussiean.
Yeah.
Aussie
number 7.
I mean,
it does help when you have like a unique costume, but like, especially in those like older shows where you are literally in the same costume as everybody else.
Right. The showboats of it all.
Yeah. It can feel a little less fulfilling.
I think it's always really nice when you have a moment to be seen in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like when you have a line, when you have a name, when you have a moment, when you are lit in the show, you know, I remember like, I don't know if I was swung out of Wicked or something, or if I just watched it later, but I was like, why am I working so hard in the back in the dark? Like, you literally can't see us there. Like,
that's a tough revelation. I remember, you know, that in Wicked too.
Dancing in the dark. Yeah. It's just wild to me. And so I definitely think if you're in a show like Newsies or like West Side Story or something where it is like an ensemble piece, like that's just magical, where you, everybody is really integral and everybody is seen. But for me, you know, being in Rock of Ages or Jersey Boys, when it was 3 female ensemble members and you are seen. And when my parents came to the show, they saw who I was and, you know, which one I was, and they heard my voice and they saw me dance. And, you know, that always feels good to do that, rather than, oh, you were the one in the that hat, right? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's hard to work really, really, really hard and sacrifice moments with your family and everything in your whole life, and you're just kind of like there to be a piece of scenery, you know? I'm not going to lie. That can be tricky.
Sure. And you don't know it till you see it. I know you exactly really. What you're talking about. And I remember, too, when I've had one or I have a couple lines in a show, the amount of weight that I put on myself with that. They're like, this is my
this
time.
This is the moment.
Yeah.
This is it.
This one line.
Yes.
And I'm more likely to forget it than if I had the bulk of the show to carry.
Yep.
Well, because it, put
it's
the pressure on it.
Thing where I remember like doing Cats. Like it was a thing where, were we all cats? Yes. But there was something that you could cling to that you had your own.
Yeah, identity.
You had your own name. You had, as ridiculous as it was, you had your own color of.
Like, Apple Fruitus.
You had your own uni.
You had your own unitard. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, I remember many times, and I would talk to other swings that had done different versions of Cats before, where you could be there, forget which cat you are, you look down, and you're like, oh, okay, I have orange arms. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool, I'm Skimbleshanks today. Like,
oh my God.
But that kind of identifying can actually have a lot, can have a really positive effect on your psyche just by knowing who you are. And I think like the atmospheric, it's still a valid form of ensemble.
100%. Let's not negate that.
It takes
at all.
A different, yeah. It takes a different perspective and a different sort of come to Jesus moment for your job.
And there should always be pride being atmospheric or whatever the job is. You've got to remember that there was 9,000 people and you're the one that booked that.
Absolutely.
For sure. Does it ever get, this is the question, right? Does it ever get boring? How do you keep it alive? How do you keep it fresh? You guys have done shows for multiple years, as have I. How do we get in there? I mean, I was saying you put so much into what you do in Moulin Rouge, as I've seen it. How do you keep that alive? Is that just a respect for the art kind of thing? Just who you are?
Yeah, I mean, both of my parents are very like motivated and like workaholics, so I definitely like have always had that kind of mentality. But I don't know, I does it get boring? Yes, it is. You do the same thing every day, but I'm still like, if young Clay was in the audience, I'm like, what show would I want to watch myself do? Or like, if I'm always picture like who is in the audience, who is watching me, and what kind of performance do I want to give that person? And so I like to give 150% as best as I can.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not everybody gets to, one, perform, two, perform on Broadway or on a national tour. Like, it's a very prestigious thing that we get to do. And so I try not to take that for granted when I get to perform.
Listen, you want to have longevity in this business, you better figure out how to do a kick-ass show when you're bored as fuck.
Yeah.
Because that is the name of the game. You're doing the same show 8 times a week. Of course you're going to get bored. Of course. Especially, you know, I was in Wicked for 3.5 years. Yes, you're bored. But this is why we're all sitting here, is because we know how to show up and give a great show and never mark and kill it, even when you don't feel like it, even when you're bored, you know, because that's a marker of somebody who's a pro. You know,
absolutely. And that is one part of the skill set that you need to work at this level. I think
exactly.
I think that was an aha moment for me just now.
I think there's an element of, because we all chose to do this, we all have dedicated our lives to doing, to being a part of this livelihood. There is a pride that you can also take in your job and the job that you're doing on stage. And again, like to speak to what both of you have just said, it's, I think it also, like, this compounds, at least for me, as I've gotten higher in my shows, I'm like, okay, this is what I do now. This is, the more shows that I do here on this, like, in this city that I've been privileged to do, like, now I have a responsibility that this is what a Broadway performer looks like. And I'm like, okay, whether it's put upon myself or other people look to me, whatever dynamic that is, I'm like, nah, okay. I have to now set an example of what this looks like.
Ah, that pride in that. I don't think everybody has that.
No. When
Aaron.
I think it's something that, like, as I see, let's be frank, like, younger experientially, people who like
name names, Aaron. I'm just kidding.
We are coming for
I'm
you.
That will like frankly act a fool in their jobs.
Yeah.
After, especially after we just came from a shutdown where no one had jobs. I'm like, oh, you don't want this? Give it back. There are other people who will take it. So yes, we've all returned to this. We've all doubled down on this is what we want to do. Like, you treat that with respect now. And that's where I get pretty, like I dig my heels a little, where I'm like, yes, are there a lot of issues in our industry? Yes, there's a lot of things that we need to do as a community and as an industry. But one of those things is doing what we said we would do when we came here.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we signed up for. This is what we wanted.
Mm-hmm. And if anything, like, I'm like, yeah, it's for the people who, like, inspire. It's so that we can be the people who inspired us when we were kids. And if they're watching you.
And they are.
And if they're watching you look a fool on stage because you don't care today. Like, and that can be malleable as well, obviously.
Sure.
But, like, you got to care. Mm-hmm. And you caring might be enough to not make it a bland show.
Right.
And you also have to figure out how to have fun and like act a fool with nobody knowing. You know what I mean? Like, you have to figure out how to mess around on stage and have your moments and have your kikis on stage.
Absolutely.
And still
and that's
do the show. You know,
so much part of it.
Yes.
Is that ensemble.
There's a balance.
Dynamic.
Yes, for sure.
Because I hate the kids who aren't good at that, Katie.
I
hate the kids who like totally drop the ball and leave their character space. No, it's more fun to do it where you're pulling off on the sly.
Exactly.
And everybody who's listening who's been in a show anywhere knows what I'm talking about. That's so important. How do you stay in shape? How much time outside of the theater is put into being ready to be in the theater in your lives?
Oh God.
This answer for me has changed over the years.
Great.
Because I will say that, like, I used to be a person that was like, oh, my show is my workout. It's definitely not that anymore. And that took me getting injured to realize that. Because I remember when I was at Cats, I had never been injured my entire career. And then I got to Cats and I broke my wrist and I broke my ankle. And I was like, what? And I was in PT after I was healed. And I was like, what the hell's going on? Like, what's happening to my PT? Dion, and shout out to Dion. and she was like, well, A, you're older. That's a real thing. B, and more likely, like, you have to be stronger than your show.
Ooh.
This show is strong as fuck. And you are not stronger. You're not strong enough to deal with it. Like, all of your other shows, you've been stronger than your show, so you're fine. Like, this show is too strong for you currently. And I took that really to heart because that really hit me really deeply. And I was like, okay, cool. So now, like, Hamilton's not an easy show. It's not Cats, but it's not an easy show.
Right.
So my castmates are like, wait, you went to Barry's today? Wait, you went to yoga today? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, on a two-show day? I'm like, yeah, because I know this is what I have to do now. Because...
Yeah.
Otherwise, I won't be strong enough for this show.
There's that pride and discipline kicking in again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you guys?
My show is my workout.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I mean, it is, but no,
it's a hell of a workout.
It is. It's.
You're also wrangling a child.
Yes, I have a kid, so like that's hard because honestly, finding the time is tricky. I do. If I'm not working, I will work out most days. I also, you know, I eat really healthy. I drink a little less than I used to. And yeah, I don't know. It's, you just have to be real at all times about what your needs are for the show, for your career, for your life, for your longevity. You know what I mean? And I think like knowing when it's time to be like, no, I need to go to yoga today. And like is, you know, just being real with yourself, I think is half the battle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And listening to your body.
Yeah.
Like I remember being in King Kong and I swung it at first, so I was like doing different things constantly. But then when I took over for one person's track and I was pulling on the like straight, the whatever pulleys, all on one side of my body.
Oh,
and I was
like,
oh, that like, it's not just like I was doing that person yesterday and I was doing this person today. So I was like having to work out one half of my body in real life so that when I got to the show and I worked out the other half of my body, it was like a really strange, like, realization of what I needed for the show and to like maintain my physical strength and not get tired before the show. Of like, I would work out my whole body and then be like, well, why is just the right half of my body hurting or the left half? So that definitely was a tricky lesson to learn.
Yeah. I mean, 8 shows a week is full time as it is, but you put all the hours that you have to do to get to 8 shows a week is a whole other situation.
And shows are harder now than they used to. The shows are harder now.
Yeah, like there's more asked of people. People are capable of more than we ever put them through in the golden age, where you had to do a box step and sung a middle C and you were a star, baby. Now everyone
that's
does
how I
everything.
Got here.
Yeah, just a good old box step and a strong middle C,
and a middle C,
and a tie-dyed top.
That's right.
One of the reasons I love this particular group of people so much on this show is you all have these lives and projects that you devote yourselves to outside of show business, which I would imagine also speaks to your longevity and maintaining, because you have other places to focus your artistry. Mm-hmm. Katie, you are a full-blown guru. are you published?
I'm self-published, but yes, published.
Yeah, tell us
author.
A little bit about your wellness empire.
Thanks, Bendy. I became a vegan when I had my kid. It's a long story, but I became...
How old's your kid now?
She's 6.
Okay. That's wild.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah, I became a vegan. I was really into it. I growing up a dancer, I had a lot of issues with food and body image, and I would binge, and then I would withhold food. I'd be like, I feel fat. Let me not eat until I'm about to keel over, and then I'll have a bite of cottage cheese. And I really, that was never like a, ooh, I'm going to do this. It was like, no, this is what I do. Like, you feel bloated. Like, just don't eat. Like, it's fine. It felt very normal to me.
Scary.
Yes, I know. It's wild when I think back about the things I would do. And food was always very closely related to punishing myself, to celebrating myself, to happy times, to sad times, which it's still, we love food is an emotional thing, I think, in a lot of ways. Anyway, without going too far off on a tangent, I became a vegan when I had my kid. It was really good for me for like a year. And then it kind of became also like a more obsessing thing, where I'd be like, well, I want some ice cream. And then I'd have a bite of ice cream and I'd be like, oh my God, nobody can know that I had ice cream because I'm a vegan. And I'm no longer a vegan. And, anyway, so then I just decided that nobody can put baby in a corner. Okay. but I'm not going to put myself in a box. Labels are not helpful. So I love to eat healthy and I love vegetables and I also love ice cream. And so over the pandemic, I had time. I started sharing my recipes on Instagram. People were liking them. My recipes are predominantly vegan and gluten-free, but whatever you can, they're a base to do whatever you want with. But my philosophy is just things that are accessible, easy, delicious, healthy food that makes food that loves you back. Yeah. So I wrote, I Googled how to publish a cookbook and I learned how to do that. And I published 3 cookbooks over the pandemic and people really like them and it's been great. And it's changed my life. Like, eating this way has just completely changed my life. I call myself plant forward. I feel like I have complete food freedom. I love to eat. And I just, now I naturally reach for things that make me feel good and keep me, youngish.
I've been with people who, friends of mine who I see posting them making your recipes and talking about it. Yes. And it's a very real thing. It's very exciting.
It's wild. I sometimes am like, God, people are so nice. And then, people like my recipes. It's been nice.
What a cool,
check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
I will now.
And Clay, I know that I've been the product of this in a small sense. You choreograph, you teach, you take this kind of beyond what you do on stage, which can also be, that's a lot of energy to exude. Tell us a little bit about what your goals and experience in that is.
Yeah, I never thought I wanted to be a choreographer, and even still I don't really know what is beyond what I'm doing now, but I've found a lot of joy in choreographing in Franklin, Massachusetts, where we have worked together before. I love the community, how supportive the community is, and I love choreographing for an entirely supportive community. Just working here, and and it's a harsh industry, and so I don't really have any desire to choreograph here, but I love like just our little small community in Franklin that we've
made. You would do that. You would spend all day on Zoom or having people come to the city and do that, yeah, and then go do your show at night.
Yeah. I mean, it just brings me a lot of joy to do that. So that's why I did it and do it still.
I love that.
Yeah.
And Aaron, let's talk about ensemble.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the documentary film.
So over the pandemic, myself, Mo Brady, Telly Leung, and Joy Monda co-produced a film documentary and directed by Pierre Murray called Ensemble. We had this idea to gather when the industry was shut down, like with no future in sight. This was before vaccinations. This was before when COVID was at its peak. We had this bright idea to gather 13 of today's current Broadway dancers to sit in a circle, have a dance class, masked and socially distanced, and then just to have a conversation about the industry as we see it now, as we experienced it, what the shutdown did to our industry, and then how we sort of see it going forward. It was about a 5-hour, 7-hour conversation that we ended up sort of collating and compiling into this about hour-long documentary that we released. We shot it at the year anniversary of the shutdown, and then we released it on the second anniversary of the shutdown.
Oh, wow.
And it was wild. It was a very intense.
I can only imagine what these conversations came. It was kind of the anti-chorus line. I feel like somehow.
It was really cool. It was really great. And I think I think sophisticated viewers will see that sort of tie to, because the last time we had this sort of glimpse into our industry was Chorus Line about like 50 years ago at this point. Mm-hmm. The industry has changed so much since that time, and we were like, there's no real like view outside of the like sensational like super dramas and super like the smashes of the world and the like
no, that's that was what we worked on together. Did we?
Yes,
right?
Oh my gosh,
that's what we worked on together.
We got it. An hour later, we got it.
That's all it took.
But with all of those portrayals of our industry, we've never seen a real introspective look of it outside of what we had 50 years ago, and so we wanted to do that again.
Amazing.
And in this time when like all of the business has been halted, the industry has been halted, so it was a really, really great experience, a really fun experience. It's currently in between platforms right now. If you want to keep up with when we have a new home, keep up with updates on at Ensemble Film Official on Instagram. It's something that I'm very, very proud of, and it was really, really great experience. It was stressful, but it was very, very fun.
Sure, just impressive to me. All of that outside of the work that you do. I'm going to let you go here in just a moment. I want to do a quick lightning round.
Oh gosh,
of questions. Okay. About your experience in various ensembles. Here we go. Favorite ensemble you've been in? Go, Clay.
Moulin Rouge.
Rock of Ages.
Newsies.
Least favorite?
Oh, gosh.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
No,
that's not personally. I loved the people. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow.
I'm horrible. Sorry.
I love it.
I'm going to say Matilda just because we were in rehearsal 24/7 with the kids.
Okay.
Gosh.
I've loved every second of it. Every moment better than the last. The gifts keep on coming.
I'm going to say King and I.
Okay. Yeah, you don't have to go any further. Mm-hmm. Craziest onstage mishap?
Before Officer Krupke happened in West Side Story, the person playing Officer Krupke forgot to come on, and so my husband and I improvised a scene of like why we were singing the song called Officer Krupke, and it was mortifying. But Alan Menken was in the audience, and so that was just seared into my brain.
Oh, you just made up a scene?
Yeah, 100%. And
do you know what would it be like if maybe there was someone here to say this?
Yes, and the stage managers were in the wings, like holding his hat and like baton that we were going to use in the number. And Chris, my husband, the genius that he is, reached midair and grabbed the hat and the baton and was like, I found these.
Oh my God.
That's hilarious. That's very noises off. I like it. Katie.
I mean, I actually have had an experience like that too in Flashdance the musical. Somebody didn't make their entrance, and yeah.
That's right. She said Flashdance the musical.
Flashdance the musical, which actually was really fun. but yeah, that's happened to me. That was mortifying. Also, just you know, falling always, like nothing is better to me than a good fall. As yeah. long as nobody is hurt, you know,
exactly.
falling like takes me out laughing it's forever. Over. Or like wig falling off. You know, that's always a good
always
one.
My favorite. The wig. Yeah. Nothing will suspend your like ruin the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Quite like someone's entire
no,
scalp and
just seeing
off.
A wig cap,
like, a
you know,
minute.
And also like this I've seen pretend. People, their wig just comes off. Do you remember Sunshine Allen? Her wig came off in the
oh.
Oz Dust, you know, that tracks.
Too good.
Yeah. The thing that jumps out to my head first, and I wasn't in the ensemble in the show, but it was an ensemble show.
Right.
I was entering for Spelling Bee. I was playing Chip, and I was the first person on stage. And I remember the opening number begins, and I turn to my stage manager and go, I'm going to have to poop immediately oh. after this number. And that's a show where we sit on stage the whole time. So I was like, yeah, because like the music began, and I... Like, you have, like, that turtle head where you're like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God,
you're
oh, God.
In trouble.
And so I run on stage and do the number, and then we get done with the number, and I just look off stage, and she's like, come on, we're ready. And I'm just like, okay, cool. And I ran off stage and took care
That's
of
impressive.
Business.
You didn't, but you didn't actually shit the pants?
No, but I literally was like, this is going to... I need to figure out a time immediately after this.
Do you remember? I feel in Wicked there were a couple stories of people who shat themselves.
It's going to happen.
There were a couple.
It's going to happen. Can you? I like the stories where people are like knee deep in their cat unitards, and
oh,
they've
no.
got to go to the bathroom. And then if they do get themselves off stage, they've got to get that thing off, and that's not easy. That takes a team.
I had the most diligent pee schedule when I was doing cats.
Yeah,
my bad. Oh, you would have to.
You had to because
you've
got
to plot that out.
Yeah.
Favorite costumes?
Oh, the Chistery, like, backpack
really?
Wings.
Yeah, very cool.
Epic.
I Rock of Ages again. Put me in a thigh high and a bra and panty. That's all I want
to
be in.
Good to go.
Yeah.
Aaron.
I think I'm having nostalgia memory because I want to say Wicked, but I feel like when I was doing Wicked, I did not think
no.
this.
You did not think that?
I don't think I thought this.
They're
when
pretty
I was
to
there.
Look at, but not fun to wear.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's been too long where I'm like, I remember it being very pretty.
Yeah.
And so I think that's my
pretty.
Answer.
Yeah. Hardest show.
Newsies. King Kong.
Oh.
The puppetry stuff. Because I've never done it.
I would say Rock of Ages or Only Gold, what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Very hard.
Cats.
Cats. Yeah. Period. That's a whole thing.
Andy. Mm-hmm. Well,
Andy Cats. Yeah. It's that period.
Yeah. I mean, that's insane. My friends. I want to respect your time, but I want to like stay here and like pillow fight with you all day long.
All day.
But thank you so much for giving us a look inside what it is to be an ensemble superstar. That's what we're calling you in this episode.
I'm in
awe of what you do. I am very impressed with the care and the level of professionalism that you hold dear. We don't see enough of it, I think. And that's not to say that, you know, we all have to be nose to the grindstone at all times, but in this day and age, I know that's talked about a lot, but you guys are very, very impressive. And plug your social media so people can like keep up with your stuff and do your recipes and watch your movie and take your class.
Yeah, Clay Rice Thompson. There's no P in Thompson, so just Clay Rice, Thomson.
Amazing. I'm at Katie Weber NYC on Insta, and it's Weber with two B's.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I'm at Aaron J. Albano. On Instagram. Like I said before, the film's Instagram is at Ensemble Film Official, all one word. And yeah, those are the two places.
In regards to ensembles, the Broadway community does make a point to celebrate them in some really fun and special ways. There's the Broadway Bowling League that happens. There is the Broadway Softball League. And at the opening night for every show, they have a ceremony where they pass along the legacy robe. It used to be called the Gypsy Robe, and now we've moved on to being a little bit more aware and intellectually sound society. The Legacy Robe is presented to the cast member in the show who has been in the most Broadway shows. They get this coat that gets passed from show to show that's got patchwork of all the different shows and posters on it that it has represented, and they run around in a giant circle and get to touch everybody on stage before the opening night and celebrate those incredible ensemble members, which is very, very cool and certainly necessary to let these ensemble members know how important they are. Well, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Bendy. Love you guys.
Oh, there are so many questions I didn't get to that I wanted to. I want to say thank you to our incredible guests, Aaron Albano, Clay Rice Thompson, and the fabulous Katie Weber. Hope that you all come back and see us soon. Celebrate those ensembles when you go see a show. Read that playbill. Read the program. Get to know their journeys and everything that they've done. They are the reason that I love this Broadway community that I'm so lucky to be a part of. Make sure that you never miss an episode of our show by subscribing. You can rate and review us. Tell your friends all about us. Put us on in your next car ride, subway ride, or whenever you're hanging out with your friends. Also, remember, you can join us on Patreon. Just click the link in the liner notes and you can support us there. And certainly, you must follow us on social media at The Broadway Cast. Follow me at Ben Does Broadway. I am your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great show.